just at the end of the 10th chapter of Hebrews, the writer is talking to us about our need of patience. In verse 35, he says, "Cast not away, therefore, your confidence. You have need of patience, that after you've done the will of God, you might receive the promise." And then he's going to tell us the basis of our patience. "For yet a little while, and he that shall come, and will not tarry." We're to have patience day by day in this life because there is a life to come, because Jesus is coming back, because God's going to come back and change things from what they are now through Christ. And so this writer says, Christ is going to come, and he's not going to tarry. And now that's the reason why we are to have patience in view of the second coming. And then the chapter closes with verse 39. "We are not of them who draw back unto perdition." We Christians, we're not going to give up and turn back, but of them that believe to the saving of the soul. We believe, and this is the basis and the foundation of our salvation. Now, that brings us, of course, to chapter 11, that's sometimes called the faith chapter, the chapter that talks about how people lived by faith. Let me come back one more time to this idea that in the New Testament, John and Paul and James and the writer of Hebrews are in perfect agreement about salvation by faith. Martin Luther came to that so clearly as he studied the Bible more and more. And the simple fact of the matter is that they emphasize different things. Just as preachers today, Bible-believing preachers now, have different things they emphasize for different groups in the church. John emphasizes the idea in his gospel that by faith people believe. By faith, by believing. And one more time, faith and believe in John's language are the same word, different ending. But P-I-S-T-E-U-O, the verb, P-I-S-T-I-S, the noun. John says by faith we become Christians, and he's going to mention that 90-some times just in his gospel. That's why folks pass out gospels of John still. Oh, I wish I did a better job of this. Now, I've got some in my car. Don't have any in my pocket right at this minute. Probably ought to, because God's blessed the ones that I've had in my pocket in years gone by. But by faith, people believe and become Christians. The Gospel of John. Now, John in his epistle is going to underscore the idea that by faith we're to love our fellow Christians. Paul's going to underscore the idea that by faith we're justified, declared righteous, made acceptable to God. James is going to underscore the idea that if you have real faith, you'll do something about it. What James was objecting to was this idea that faith's all up on the top of your head. I believe the right doctrines. James says to them, so does the devil. The devil knows about God. Faith is response. It's commitment. It's decision. It's taking sides. It's making up our minds that we're going to walk with Christ because of God's help. And so, the writer of Hebrews is going to underscore this idea that by faith God's people live. Now, Paul's going to have that too. Paul's going to say we walk by faith, not by sight, and things like this. And so, here in this first verse of chapter 11, faith is the substance of things hoped for. I'll not do it, but we could tarry for a half hour on this word substance. The Greek word hypostasis says faith is the reality. of things hoped for, the confidence, the conviction, the assurance. And then, if you work on this, you'll find that the same word hypostasis was sometimes used for what we call titles or deeds, the documents which guarantee the possession of land or property. Faith now is the substance. It's the confidence. It's the reality of things hoped for. And it's the deed, it's the title, the guarantee of these things that we hope for and have not as yet seen. And that's the next phrase, the evidence of things not seen. Now, you see, here in this 11th chapter, it's going to talk about faith. And it says in verse 2, by it the elders obtained a good report. The leaders that God sent, probably he's thinking about the Old Testament, but Peter calls himself an elder, and so does John. By faith, the older folks, the folks in the Old Testament, obtained a good report. Because they had faith in God and trusted in God, they had a good report. Through faith, we understand. By our belief in God, and Peter's going to say, use evidences for this now, and be ready to give an answer to every man that asks you a reason for the hope that is within you. But if we have faith and believe God's book, then we'll understand that the worlds were framed by the Word of God. The worlds were framed by the Word of God. They didn't come by evolution. They didn't come by a Big Bang. They didn't come by chance. This isn't the time to do it. I wish that we had time to talk about how, I'm talking about 1984, some of the major scientists in England, much more than in this country, are just saying, oh, well, yeah, we've had this fairy tale about evolution. That's their word now. And they are saying, yeah, it's been a trade secret for so many years that there aren't any missing links. This is just something that evolution's made up. It's a fairy tale. It won't stand the test of science. If some of you folks listening are evolutionists, I would wish so much you'd really look at the evidence. Look at the mathematical evidence. What's the possibility that the order and design in nature could come by chance? And I've told you, Havner, that the big computer up at MIT says if you had 8.5 million years, maybe it was billion years, I should have gotten that straight, but if you had these millions and millions of years, what's the possibility that you could have the order and design in nature by chance? And the big computer says zero. It's a Monte Carlo program if you want to check up on it. But through faith, we understand that God made the wonderful things on the mountain. And God created animals and man. And the worlds were framed by the Word of God. So the things which you're seeing, they weren't made of things which do appear now. God made them. Now, not only do we understand about origins, but by faith Abel worshipped the son of Adam. By faith Abel offered unto God a more excellent sacrifice than Cain, and God accepted Abel's sacrifice and rejected Cain's. Cain brought some garden vegetables, and that wasn't the right thing to bring. By which he obtained witness that he was righteous. This is Abel. God testifying of his gifts. And by it, he being dead, yet speaketh. There are so many people, thousands of them, who are dead, and yet their life lives on, and they continue to speak. Not just by the books they wrote, though that's one way. We've been thinking in the community in which I live in the past week about a lady who passed away earlier this year. And folks have been thinking about how her influence and her life and her testimony lives on. And this was by this lady's faith. By faith, Abel offered a sacrifice. Now, let's get the big point of this. By faith, Abel worshiped. By faith, you and I ought to worship when we sing the hymns. Our hearts ought to be in the singing of the hymn. We ought not sing the hymns that we know when we got our minds on something else. We ought to give our gifts by faith, part of our commitment to God and our participation in God's program. By faith, this man worshiped. All right? In verse 5, there was a man named Enoch back in the early chapters of Genesis, and it says he was translated. God took him to heaven without his ever dying. He was translated that he should not see death, and he was not found because God had translated him. Before his translation is being taken now, he had this testimony that he pleased with God. If you'll go back and read that in Genesis, it's going to tell you that he walked with God. If you're going to walk with God, you've got to be going in the same direction God's going. This man walked with God by faith. And do I need to say that the point of this is for us that by faith you and I ought to be walking with God where we work in our social life? We ought to be going the same way God is going. And then verse 6 simply says, it's impossible without faith to please God. We can't please God unless we trust in God, believe in God. He that cometh to God must believe that he is. He couldn't come unless he did. And that he is a rewarder of them that diligently seek him. Seek and ye shall find, the Bible would say. And so without faith, unless we have real faith in our hearts, we can't please God. We can't come to him. Now, here's the story of Noah. Here are the illustrations of faith. And this is by far, I think, the clearest place in the Bible about what faith is and how we are to walk, to live by faith. By faith, Noah, being warned of God of things not seen as yet, moved with fear. Now, Noah was just plain afraid that his family would drown, that he would drown. And so he prepared an ark. He built the ark. Took him years and years to build it. To the saving of his house. And he, by this, condemned the world, became heir of the righteousness, which is by faith. He inherited God's gifts and things like this. Now, here's Noah preaching, building the ark. Folks didn't take him seriously. More and more, the geologists are coming around to say, oh, yes, we had some kind of catastrophe like a flood. About 4 or 5 miles from where I'm making this broadcast, you go up a long, long ways up the mountain, and you'll find, I haven't counted them, they're too many to count, but I think the figure is millions of river rocks. And this Holston River isn't anywhere near them. And the only streams around where there are all these river rocks down in the dirt, the only streams are little creeks. Oh, where'd all those river rocks come from? Well, they came from streams back before the flood, I think. If you want a larger example, go over in North Carolina between Asheville and Hendersonville and find Mud Creek. It's a sign on the highway, I think, still. Little bitty creek. It was once the mighty river Appalachia that drained that section of the world. Water that now goes into rivers like the Catawba or something like that. Yeah, but in that part of the country, there are all these river rocks. If you want to say the same thing in different language, how come up on top of the mountains you got all these fossils of sea-dwelling creatures? Well, of course, back before the flood, you had a different terrain. And Noah believed God. and God spared him in the flood. Now, the point of this is, by faith, Noah built the ark. This was part of his commitment. Noah didn't say, well, now I know about the flood, and I'm going to tell some folks. Well, he did that. Oh, yes. The Bible talks about his preaching. But Noah obeyed. And this word obey is in the Bible associated with faith. I don't mean faith as works now. I didn't say that. But if we have real faith, James says we're going to do something about it. Well, that's what this man Noah did. He built the ark. And you know, I can't resist mentioning that the ark's still over there. You wouldn't believe, I think I have in just my own little library 5 whole books about evidence for the ark being over there. You know, most people around the world knew about the flood long before the folks from Europe came. The American Indians knew about the flood. They're descended from Noah. And there are not dozens now, but hundreds of flood stories. You can read Jewish historian Josephus, and he'll tell you that the ark was still up there. He talks about the folks who had seen it. And there are folks in this country who grew up at the foot of Mount Ararat, and they were in it 75, 80 years ago. And there have been the expeditions this summer that didn't turn out. The helicopter that was supposed to take one crowd up to the ark broke down, and they didn't accomplish all that they wanted to. But there's the first-hand testimony of people who've actually been in the ark that Noah built. And, of course, the point of it here is that Noah built this by faith. Now, the same thing in verse 8 about Abraham. Abraham, when he was called to go out into a place which he should have to receive for an inheritance, obeyed. By faith, Abraham left Ur of the Chaldees. Have I mentioned to you that Ur of the Chaldees has been dug up just much place on the map as Richmond, Virginia, or Nashville, Tennessee, or something like that? It was a well-civilized place. Most of the houses were two-story things with two apartments on both floors, 1100 square feet per apartment. Abraham came from a rich man's town. Yes, and he spent, and this is going to tell us right here in Hebrews, spent the rest of his life living in tents. When he was called to go out into this place, land of Canaan, which he would afterward receive for an inheritance, he obeyed. And he went out not knowing whither he went. Sometimes we don't know where God's leading us. Sometimes we don't know about the future. Sometimes we don't know about the work God has for us to do down the road. But what I want us to see here in this verse is that by faith Abraham obeyed. He responded. Faith for Abraham wasn't saying, yes, sir, I believe God's promises. Oh, he did. He believed him in top of his head, but he got busy and packed up in obedience. And this says, by faith, he sojourned, he lived decade after decade in the land of promise, as in a strange country, dwelling in tabernacles, that means tents, with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise. He gave up this big city in which he lived, where they had these big apartments I was telling you about. And he spent the rest of his life living in tents. And Isaac and Jacob did the same thing. Why did he do it? Well, verse 10 says it over. He looked for a city that hath foundations, whose builder and maker is God. He was really looking forward to God's tomorrow. He was looking forward to what God had promised. And so he just waited. Now, through faith also, Sarah received strength to become a mother. And she became a mother when she was, we think, up in her 90s. Says she was past age. Because she judged him faithful who had promised. And so there sprang even of one from Abraham now, and him as good as dead, so far as being a father was concerned. So many as the stars of the sky in multitude, you can't count them, and as the sand which is by the seashore. Now verse 13 says, these all died in faith, not having received the promises. They didn't meet Christ personally and things like that. But having seen them afar off, Jesus says, Abraham saw my day and was glad, and they looked forward by faith to what God had promised, and they were persuaded of them, and this says they embraced them. Doesn't that tell us what's being emphasized here? They hugged these promises. They took them to their bosoms. They accepted them. And then they confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. This world is not my home. I'm only passing through, the Christians say. Now, John Bunyan is the man who understood this. He wrote a whole book about Pilgrim. Pilgrim came by the cross and lost his sin, his burden. And we have in the hymn book, at the cross where I first saw the light and the burden of my heart rolled away. Well, that's really from John Bunyan. But then John Bunyan's Pilgrim lived as a pilgrim. He went by Vanity Fair and climbed the hill of difficulty and had to go by Doubting Castle and things like this. These early children of God, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. In Paul's language, our citizenship is in heaven. And I know in the Old English it has conversation, but it's not talking about talk. It means we are citizens of heaven. And these folks confessed that there was a sense in which this world was not their home. And verse 14 says, the people that say such things declare plainly that they seek a country, one that's to come after the coming of Christ. And if they'd been mindful of that country from whence they came out, they might have had opportunity to have returned. If Abraham had just had his heart set on going back to Ur of the Chaldees, he could have found some excuse to go. But, verse 16, now they desire a better country, that is, an heavenly, and so God's not ashamed to be called their God. For he hath prepared for them a city, the city eternal. Now, Abraham lived this. And in verse 17, it says, by faith Abraham, when he was tested, when he was tried, it's in Genesis 22, offered up Isaac. At least he got ready to. God, it says God was testing him now and told him to offer up his son. And he that had received the promises offered up his only begotten son, of whom it was said that in Isaac shall thy seed be called. God had promised him that his descendants would come from Isaac. And then God, in testing Abraham, says, Abraham, I want you to offer him up as a sacrifice. And Abraham prepared the altar and put Isaac on it. And then God stopped him right at that point. And the ram was caught by his horns in the thicket. And Abraham offered him instead. The point is that by faith, Abraham did the hard thing, the difficult thing. He was ready to go through with it. God didn't let him now. But he was willing to go forward in obedience when the road was difficult. And this says he accounted that God was able to raise him up, even if he had gone all the way. And then, by faith, verse 20, Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau concerning things to come. And Jacob, when he was dying, blessed both the sons of Joseph, Ephraim and Manasseh. By faith, these folks pointed children to the things of God. Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau, his sons, about things to come. He wanted these boys to be future-oriented in the things of God. And here's old Jacob, a real old man down in Egypt, and he gets the grandchildren. And you grandparents will understand about this. He loved these grandchildren. They were the grandchildren by this boy Joseph that he loved so much that had disappeared, and Jacob thought for years that he was dead. And now it says that Jacob blessed these sons of Joseph and worshiped. By faith, Joseph, when he died, made mention of the Exodus, the departing of the children of Israel, and gave commandment concerning his bones. Joseph was, see, the leader of Egypt. They'd had a big state funeral just for his father, because Jacob was his father. Well, they would have had a big, big, big funeral for Joseph. Joseph says, when I die, I don't want to be buried. And the old preachers used to say it was a sermon 40 years long and dry as a bone. Well, it was. All the way through the wilderness, they carried Joseph's bones. Now, you know enough about children, don't you, to know what went on? The Bible doesn't spell this out. But this is a big procession, part of the procedure. Why didn't Mama, why didn't they bury Uncle Joseph? They buried Uncle Reuben, Uncle Simeon, Uncle Gad, and Uncle Asher. Uncle Joseph said God was going to visit us, and then we could take his body when God fulfilled his promise. And everybody went back to the land of promise. And this says, by faith, Joseph made that will and gave commandment concerning his bones. I think Joseph wanted to do some preaching after he was gone. I think you and I should arrange our affairs so we can do something for the Lord after we are gone. May God be with you today.